Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Lori Nissen, who is a licensed clinical social worker and director of family and community services at Banner Alzheimer's Institute. And we're going to be discussing weddings, funerals, and dementia. Janice, we're not going to be talking about how do we manage weddings and funerals with someone with dementia. We're actually going to be talking about family dynamics, family conflict. A lot of times when we talk about dementia and Alzheimer's disease, we call it a family disease. This is not something that's just going to affect the individual who's received the diagnosis. And families can be incredibly complicated and nuanced. We all have expectations for how we envisioned our parents growing older or how we envisioned our future with our spouse or our partner. We have deeply embedded patterns of communication that can span across generations. And whether it's a holiday, whether it's dementia, whether it's weddings or it's funerals, it can bring out the best and the worst in families.
It's so true, Heather. You know, sometimes we hear comedians joking about family dynamics, but when it comes down to it, sometimes we're laughing about the very things that might be the very most difficult in our lives, like family dynamics. And dementia can really upset the balance of the family. Things can get complicated and so challenging when dementia is involved. And if you're feeling anything from minor to major tension to our caregivers, if you're feeling these things with your family, we always recommend seeking support from professionals. And today we are so excited to have Lori with us to share her years of experience on this very topic.
Welcome back, Lori.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So we had the pleasure of interviewing you for our very first episode of Dementia Untangled. And so we do have a bit of an understanding of your background in the field. So I'm curious to learn this time. Could you share what's your favorite aspect of working with this population, or really what keeps you working with this population?
You know, I've had the pleasure of working in aging for many years, and I just find aging adults so interesting. They're so wise, insightful. They have beautiful stories to tell. And I've just found the population of working with those families to be really inspiring and just very grateful for even limited opportunities that you offer them for help and support. So it's just been a very gratifying career for me. And I feel really very privileged to work with these aging adults and their families. I learn something new every time I work with a new family. So it's certainly a privilege. And then I'd say, you know, just working with colleagues, you know, at Banner and key stakeholders, people who really have a passion for the aging adult population has been really inspiring. So I feel very fortunate to work with such bright, innovative, and empathic colleagues.
Well, I think Amber, Janice, and myself can echo those sentiments as well. We have a pretty difficult, sticky subject that we're going to be untangling today, and that's family dynamics and family conflict. Lori, I wonder if we could start out by maybe level setting a little bit. Could you give us some statistics around family caregivers?
Well, we know that in general, about 83% of caregivers are, you know, family members, friends, neighbors who are taking care of someone. about half of family caregivers are taking care of somebody with Alzheimer's disease or related dementia. And when we think about our caregivers, almost half of them say that providing help to somebody with dementia has been a very rewarding experience. But on the flip side, more dementia caregivers have higher levels of stress and burden compared to caregivers of other disease states. And in a 2020 Alzheimer's Association Facts and Figures special report, nearly 60% of those caregivers rated their emotional stress of caregiving as high or very high. About 40% of those people reported clear symptoms of depression. They also reported high levels of physical strain, and about 75% of them reported a concern about maintaining their own health since they became a caregiver. So while it is rewarding, we're seeing that caregiving for folks with dementia can be very emotionally, physically, and even financially straining.
With all of this caregiver stress and burden, no wonder weddings, funerals, and holidays bring out even more of the best and worst in families. Can you talk about what you've seen in this over the years?
You know, weddings, funerals, and dementia, I like to say, really can ignite a lot of mixed emotions. They can bring long-standing family conflicts to the surface. And really, sometimes dementia kind of shatters our view of kind of what we thought the future was going to look like, whether it's our own aging experience or, you know, trying to juggle taking care of a spouse or partner. Or maybe we're really kind of stuck in the middle. We're taking care of children, we're working full time, and now, you know, our aging parent is declining right in front of us. So that can make us feel very vulnerable. It really, you know, really kind of messes with our expectations about what we thought life was going to be like at that very given moment.
Lori, it seems to me a lot of this kind of comes back to what you just said, expectations. I have a vision of what my wedding is going to be like. I have a vision of what my parents and our relationship will be like as they age. I have a vision for what my aging process with my partner will look like. And when that changes or even gets derailed, as oftentimes happens when dementia enters the picture, that can increase a lot of stress on the people involved. Can you talk a little bit more about expectations?
Well, I think, you know, anytime we're faced with, you know, redefining our expectations, our emotions are high. We're often dealing with a high level of stress. We may be feeling very vulnerable. As experienced specifically with the person with dementia, that person is changing right before our eyes. You know, I know in a previous podcast, we talked about ambiguous loss. So often we're grieving the person who's here, but not here in the same way. And so that makes these kinds of situations very difficult. But I think you're right. We have a lot of preconceived notions, ideas, and expectations. And a very wise caregiver in one of our support groups once said to me, you know, whenever I hit a wall or an obstacle in my relationship with my partner, with my kids, at my job, or with my aging parents, one had Alzheimer's disease and one had Parkinson's disease, I realize that I really have to redefine my expectations and not set myself up for failure. So I think some of it really comes down to accepting where things are and you know, taking care of the person with dementia, but also minding ourselves at the same time.
Such sage advice, redefining expectations and accepting the situation. You know, sometimes these things we say rear their heads at weddings, funerals, and dementia, but could you break it down? What are some of the situations in dementia where we might see this family conflict coming from?
You know, I think it really varies from family to family. I mean, in some cases, there is a blended family. And so maybe family members aren't seeing eye to eye. Maybe it's an adult parent And it is their step parent who's taking care of their parent. And they maybe haven't really invited that person into the family. And they're really struggling with the decision that that person is making about their parent. Sometimes it's really just this lack of awareness in the person with dementia. We talked about that in our previous podcast, that anosognosia, where the person with dementia doesn't really recognize or have a good awareness or understanding of their own disease. And so that creates a lot of denial within the family, even though we well know that dementia is not a normal part of aging. You know, in many cultures, and even in our American culture, people don't necessarily have a good understanding of dementia and see some of these changes as just a normal part of aging. And then I think, you know, there's often unresolved conflicts. I mean, there can be adult children who have really separated from their parents for their own mental health and wellness because they found their parent to be maybe abusive or negative or held them back in some way, or maybe the parent was, you know, had their own mental health issues or even an addiction. And so now we've got this person who, now has a dementing illness and really needs somebody to step in and care for them. And so that becomes very complicated. How do I do that while I'm still maintaining my boundaries and my own wellness? But this person is a human being. So how do I make sure that this person gets the care that they need and that they're safe? So I think all of these things bring up lots of conflict. They can bring up a multitude of mixed emotions. They can really press upon unresolved conflicts, and they can make the situation very complicated. And I think dementia itself is very complicated. It's different than other disease states. So if we were talking about a parent or a partner who had cancer, you know, the two of us might be having an open conversation about it. But because it's dementia and the person doesn't necessarily have good awareness, and then their memory and their thinking and ability to make good decisions really is fading, it makes the situation much more complex.
Each family is so unique, but I wonder, do you have some kind of general strategies that you use to guide caregivers in working through family conflict or with difficult family members?
You know, I think that's a great question, which with each family, it's certainly unique in terms of what the situation or the issue is. But I think it's really essential for a family to get on the same page when they're caring for somebody with Alzheimer's related dementia. And really to put on that hat of recognizing that we really have to focus on what is in the best interest of the person with dementia. And so sometimes just keeping our focus there can really be helpful. I think it's important, and this is a good wake-up call for all of us who are listening, who are adults, to make sure that we have things like advanced directives in place, a healthcare power of attorney, a mental health care power of attorney, a financial and legal power of attorney. Because when we get in a circumstance with an illness or an accident where we can't make decisions for ourselves, then we've already entrusted that key representative to be able to make decisions on our behalf. But I think if we're in conflict, those elements are not serving us as well as they should. I think involving a neutral party, a third party, can often be helpful, because as family members in the situation, we're all subjective, right? We have these long-standing relationships. We have our own views, our own biases, our own unresolved conflicts. And so sometimes a neutral party, like a clinical social worker like me, or a nurse, or a care manager, or even, you know, a family spiritual leader, can really sometimes be helpful in meeting with the family and getting them on the same page. And then I think if you are the primary caregiver, healthcare power of attorney, keeping family members up to date on appointments and what the medical provider is saying, really getting other family members educated about the disease, or at least giving them the tools to get educated, is really helpful. And I think, you know, in these times and in this day and age, we have so much technology at our fingertips, we can really use that to our benefit. So, you know, many medical social work counseling visits are done in person, but many are done even through telehealth. So it's a great opportunity to involve other family members who may not be able to be in the office or who don't even live in the same place to be part of and hear updates and really be part of that conversation.
Thank you so much for mentioning technology, because I think people don't realize how helpful it can be, especially when they have long distance family members. And I wonder if you can share with us a little bit, do you have any strategies specifically for working with long distance family members who might not be seeing what's going on, and maybe the caregiver is feeling like, you know, I'm feeling all alone out here in another state, 10,000 miles from my family.
Yeah, I think that applies in so many different ways, Janice. So I think, you know, first of all, we can use technology in appointments, you know, with the medical professional, as I mentioned, through telehealth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the telehealth system that we use at Banner, we can send up to 6 links. So, you know, many family members can participate in that visit and really get, you know, kind of leveled on their understanding of where the person is at. Because I think with disease progression, the primary caregiver, the person who's living with that person, often has a very different view of the progression of the disease than a family member who's living out of town and maybe stays engaged, but calls the person with dementia and they have good social skills and they're able to have a good superficial conversation. And that family member or friend who's out of town is left with, well, you know, I think this primary caregiver is exaggerating because he, you know, mom, dad, you know, friend, neighbor, brother, sister sounded just fine on the phone. So I think really being part of those appointments can really be helpful. I think using technology to have these family meetings and discussions with the person with dementia, if they're capable of being engaged in that conversation or if the disease has progressed without them, to really talk about good strategies and get on the same page for discussing what the care is going to be like now and in the future. Because I think what's difficult for families is once they get on the same page and they're comfortable where things are, the game changes because the person's disease progresses. And so we're having to have these hard conversations about difficult life experiences and how we're going to manage them. Things like driving and how do we implement care and how do we cover the cost of care? And what's our short-term plan? I mean, we have one primary caregiver involved, and that's often what happens is that the care ends up being one person. So I think having these conversations in a group and I think asking for help is also really important. We often have the primary caregiver who's saying things like, well, you know, my kids haven't really been very emotionally helpful. They haven't offered to help. And it's like, well, maybe they think you got this. You have to be really clear in asking for help and clear in specifying the kind of help that you need or want to help you and support the person with dementia during this journey.
That's so good.
You know, even when we start involving long distance family members or even those that are geographically close to us, sometimes there can be conflicting opinions on what's best for the person living with the disease, differing opinions on care. Can you talk to us a little bit more about where that might be coming from and also what could be done about it?
Well, I think you're right. It's very complicated. So everybody who's involved may have a different relationship. They may see the person in person. They may not. So they might not have a good view of where the person really is in their disease state. And so I think it's really important to really help as a family member, try to educate other family members, you know, along with our earlier discussion of technology. You know, there are often healthcare portals for the electronic medical record. So you may be downloading reports and being able to share those reports with key family members to really give them a clear view of where the person is, you know, cognitively and functionally. And then I think we have to take a close, hard look at who we are as a caregiver and really putting that person first. I mean, I think when we talked about this topic of weddings, funerals, and dementia, you know, things get really complicated. People have, you know, other reasons for making decisions. So, you know, I was giving an example of, you know, a family that we were educating at Banner about really that this person was in the moderate stage of dementia and could not be driving. And his wife was really reluctant to give up the keys because she had macular degeneration. So if he stopped driving, she couldn't drive. And then she really felt they were going to be trapped. So really, sometimes there are really complicated reasons for how we make those decisions. In other cases, you know, there can be, you know, other family members who have mental illness or who have an addiction, who may have a different view of this person. Maybe it's their parent. Maybe they have always lived with that person and they don't want to give up their residence. So they're reluctant to have the person move into a residential care community, even though that may be what's best. You know, weddings, funeral, dementia, and money, you know, can make things really complicated. You may have, you know, family members who are caregivers and they're looking out for what's best in this for this person, but they're also looking out for their own benefit. And maybe they've had some financial hardships and they're counting on this inheritance. And now we have, you know, the treatment team that's saying, no, this person really needs to implement in-home care. This is really the rainy day. They really need to look at some kind of assisted living environment for their own wellness, safety, and security. And other family members may be saying, wow, well, that's really expensive. That's going to dip into what I thought was going to become mine when this person dies. So I think, you know, these situations are very complicated and sometimes there are opposing goals. And so I think that's why, you know, really looking at having advanced directives in place, having key decision makers, using experts, whether it's the medical provider, social worker, nurse, even that spiritual leader to really help guide the family in navigating through these really murky and muddy situations can really be helpful. And in some cases, you know, family conflict prevails. We have situations where the family has done the right thing. The person with dementia did put their advanced directives in place when they were able to do so earlier in the disease or even before they developed dementia. And we have family in conflict. And the family, there may be members of the family who don't agree with what the power of attorney is saying they're going to do, what decisions they're going to make on that person's medical care or even non-medical care, you know, bringing caregivers in home or moving that person into an assisted living situations. And so it's rare, but in those cases, someone who really disagrees with what the power of attorney is doing can actually petition the court for guardianship and really take control of the situation in their own hands. And that's a process that goes, of course, as I mentioned, through the court, and a judge will make a decision on whether that person is granted guardianship, but a guardianship is going to usurp or trump a power of attorney. And so then that person becomes the one who's making decisions.
I have a question about back to caregiver stress and burden for families that are maybe further away. Are there things that they can do to help reduce the stress and burden of the caregiver and the person living with dementia?
I think it's about, you know, having the conversation. I think it's about offering to connect. Some out-of-town family members do things like make phone calls, figure out and help plan for care. So they might be the one researching in-home caregiver companies so that they can offer the primary caregiver some respite. And maybe that they are offering respite themselves. So there are family members who may come in for a weekend or a week or two at a time, or even a month to provide hands-on care themselves to really help in that situation. They may be, you know, sending letters or shopping for things online to really help support what's needed for the person with dementia or a family caregiver. So I think there are lots of ways to be part of the solution, but it's about that open communication and really exploring what ways can I be helpful.
A couple times now, education has come up when we're talking about how best to work with family members And I recall teaching a class early in my career, really talking through the progression of the disease and what their needs might be as the person moves through the course. And a family member came up to me afterwards and just said, I had no idea. And they took the steps to then support that primary caregiver. Can you talk a little more about the importance of education for family members?
Yeah, I think that's a great point that you make, Heather. So I think education is really important. So it's a great service. What we're doing here today even is just offering opportunities for family members to get education on demand. I think all family members who are involved in the care of somebody with dementia can benefit from support groups, which may be done in person, but many are now offered virtually. So that's a great opportunity to get education and learn. And when there are family members who disagree about what the needs are of the person with dementia, a great opportunity for supporting the primary caregiver and for an awakening of education is to recommend that the out-of-town family member come in and stay with the person with dementia for a few days. It offers the primary caregiver an opportunity to take some respite, and it gives the person who lives out of town, who maybe has a different view of that person's level of dementia, a bird's eye view when they're living with that person and really seeing seeing that person face-to-face and really having to take more of a hands-on care approach. It's definitely can be eye-opening and an opportunity for them to have a better education about where the person is in their disease. And sometimes that can really bring the family together. Maybe they had no idea how impaired mom, dad, brother or sister was. And now they're living with that person for a few days and recognizing how the needs are really great. And sometimes it gives them, you know, a great respect for the primary caregiver and a deeper appreciation for the kind of care that they've been providing all along. And it often makes them understand and want to contribute or help more.
Yes, education can come in many ways. And I think one of the things that people learn in our support groups is that, you know, you're not alone in this.
Absolutely. I mean, I think dementia on a good day can be very isolating. I know you've talked in other episodes about dementia friends and really the idea that we need to elevate awareness of dementia in communities in order to lower stigma. And so I think, you know, education is really critical in that way. You know, but I think with families, you know, sometimes despite best efforts and intention, conflicts can really be a big barrier to the family coming together and really looking out for the person, for the person's best interest.
This has been a really interesting conversation, both helping us untangle where family conflicts are coming from and giving us some good strategies to try to work through them. Before we close, Lori, could you give us your final thought when it comes to weddings, funerals, and dementia?
Sure. I think, you know, first and foremost, we really want to take a look at the person with dementia and what's in their best interest. But we also want, you know, family members to be able to, you know, clearly communicate what they can do and what they can't do to really kind of respect some of the boundary issues that exist. I think it's really important for people to plan ahead. And if you are an adult, it's good for you to have your advanced directives in place so that you can decide who your decision maker is going to be and put into writing and documents what you want and what you don't want if you were to develop a life-threatening disease. I think always communicating with professionals who have, you know, an interest in the person with dementia is really helpful. I think getting support, advice, and recommendations is critically helpful. And I think when we're looking at, you know, family caregivers, you know, making sure that they have a plan for support, they have a plan for their own respite, and looking at care in terms of long-term and short-term approaches. What do we need now to help support the person with dementia? And longer-term, what will we need to make sure that they're cared for as the disease progresses? But I think, you know, in summary, you know, a former colleague once said to me, a normal family is one you just don't know very well yet. So I think the idea here is knowing that, you know, families are unique. Conflict, upset, duress during these challenging times is very common and expected as a dementia diagnosis is made and the disease progresses. But really keeping the person's best interest in the center of the conflict is always a good place to start, combined with a lot of open communication, trying to work together as a team to really help you succeed in making the best decisions possible for the person with dementia, and also taking into account your own support and care needs as well.
Today, our conversation has been with Lori Nissen, a licensed clinical social worker and director of family and community services at Banner Alzheimer's Institute. We appreciate you helping us untangle family dynamics and dementia.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to join you today.
Yes, and thank you so much, Lori. We were so glad to hear from you today. Such great advice. And hey, thank you, Heather, for another awesome conversation. And thank you to you, our wonderful listeners, for joining us. And if you haven't already, subscribe to Dementia Untangled and share this podcast. And a big thank you to Amber Ayers for doing our producing and editing behind the scenes. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.